This episode is about a boy who, at just 8 years old, was so good at chess that his family and friends thought he might be possessed by the devil. It's the story of José Raúl Capablanca. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Audible Chess, where I tell the story of chess through history, fiction, and the games of the masters. This is the first episode where the training resources are sent via email rather than through your podcasting app. If you haven't already received the training resources for this episode in your inbox, head to the Substack website and subscribe to the newsletter. There's a link to the Substack page in the podcast show notes. I hope you enjoy the show. José Raúl Capablanca was born in Havana in November of 1888. He started playing chess at just 4 years old. His father was a Spanish cavalry captain, and the story is that José was observing a game between his father and a cavalry general when he interrupted to warn his father about a mistake he might make. His father told him to be quiet, and he just finished the game, but afterwards Capablanca set up the pieces, played through a match against his father, and won. Over the next few years, he became very good, very fast, but not everyone looked fondly on his chess skill, and he was actually forced to stop playing for a time. Here's a quote from Mike Hennebry.
Before he was 8 years of age, there was talk of him being unnatural, even having devils at his side. For the next few years, at the urging of the family doctor and a priest, little José Raúl was not allowed to play chess.
Once he was permitted to return to the game, which was around the age of 8, he was taken to the Havana Chess Club, but on the advice of a doctor, he was not allowed to play too frequently. By now, though, he could defeat even the strongest players. Shockingly, at 13 years old, he beat the Cuban chess champion, Juan Corzo. In 1905, he went to Columbia College in New York, where he joined the Manhattan Chess Club, and not surprisingly, became the club's strongest player. He was studying chemical engineering at the college, but eventually his financial support was withdrawn because he was found to be neglecting his studies in favor of chess. He left the college after just one semester to devote himself to the game. In 1911, at a tournament in San Sebastian, Capablanca surprised everyone by defeating the best chess players in the world. In September 1913, he accepted a job in the Cuban Foreign Office. Hooper and Wilde write this about the job.
He had no specific duties, but was expected to act as a kind of ambassador at large, a well-known figure who would put Cuba on the map wherever he traveled.
Fittingly, his very first assignment was to go to St. Petersburg and play in a chess tournament. The world champion, Emmanuel Lasker, would be there. In the end, Capa came second, with Lasker taking first place. Lasker and Capa met again in 1921, and this time Capa had the edge. Lasker resigned after 14 games. He'd lost four of them and drawn all of the others. Capa remained world champion for the next 6 years. On March 7th, 1942, the story is that Capablanca was observing a game and chatting with friends at the Manhattan Chess Club when he asked for some help to remove his coat, and then he collapsed. He was taken to the Mount Sinai Hospital, where he was treated for a stroke. He died at 6 a.m. the next day. Capablanca was one of the greatest chess players in history. Nathan Davinsky and Raymond Keene's book, entitled Warriors of the Mind, ranks him fifth of all time, behind Kasparov, Karpov, Fischer, and Botvinnik. Boris Spassky thought that Capa was the best player of all time, and his rival, Bobby Fischer, said that he admired Capa's, quote, light touch, and his ability to find the right move quickly. What seems to unite commentators in their judgment of Capa's style of play was its crystal clarity. Here's a quote from Raymond Keene.
Of Capablanca's own games, it has been written, with justice, that they breathe a serenity, a lucid crystal clarity, a type of model perfection. Indeed, that they are the product of supreme chessboard art.
And here, finally, is a quote from Irving Chernev.
Capablanca handled every phase of the game with equal facility. His technique was flawless, and his style so graceful and elegant as to make chess look easy. No player in all the world's history has equaled, in artistry, logic, and crystalline clarity, the masterpiece produced by Capablanca.
The game this episode is Capablanca versus Mark Fonaroff from New York, 1918. If you haven't already, read through this month's newsletter for the training resources. You'll also find links to the game annotation there to study. Again, if you haven't already signed up for the newsletter, there's a link to the sign-up page in the show notes. Thanks everyone for listening, and I hope the show helps improve your chess. One, pawn to e4. Pawn to e5. Two. Knight to f3. Knight to c6. What color is the d4 square? It's a dark square. Three. Pawn to d4. Pawn to d6. Four. Knight to c3. Knight to f6. The knight on c3 attacks which two center squares? d5 and e4. Five. Bishop to b5. Bishop to d7. Six. Castles kingside. Bishop to e7. Which two black pieces are attacking the white pawn on d4? The knight on c6 and the pawn on e5. Seven. Rook to e1. E-pawn takes d4. Eight. Knight takes d4. Knight takes d4. Which white piece is defending the bishop on b5? The knight on c3. Nine. Queen takes d4. Bishop takes b5. Ten. Knight takes b5. castle's kingside. Name the pieces on the E file. The white rook on E1 and pawn on E4, and the black bishop on E7. Eleven. Queen to C3. Pawn to C6. Twelve. Knight to D4. Knight to D7. Which piece is on the D8 square? Black's queen. 13. Knight to F5. Bishop to F6. Fourteen. Queen to G3. Knight to E5. 15. What square is White's dark squared bishop on? C1. 15. Bishop to F4. Queen to C7. Sixteen. Rook on the A file to D1. Rook on the A file to D8. 17. Name the two black pieces defending the pawn on G7. The bishop on F6 and the king on G8. 17. Rook takes D6. Rook takes D6. 18. Bishop takes E5. 19. Rook to D1. 20. How many pawns does Black have? How many pawns does White have? 21. Black has 6 pawns, White has 7. Rook takes D1. 22. Bishop takes E5. 20. Knight to H6. Check. king to h8. Which square will the white knight on h6 move to in order to fork black's king and queen? f7. f7. 21. Queen takes e5. Queen takes e5. f22. Knight takes f7. Check. Black resigns.